to Distanced, a podcast about people around the world who are dealing with life in quarantine during the age of the coronavirus. I'm your host, Sunil Rajaraman, and I'm recording from my home in San Mateo, California. Hey, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Distanced. I'm kind of making my way around the country and eventually the world. Episode one, I had a great interview with Austin Shepherd, who's a software engineer based out of Shanghai, China. Today, we're bringing it all the way back to the West Coast, where I interview Kate Rossetti, who is a working professional. She and her husband live in San Diego, and they have four kids. And quarantined with, you know, two kids here myself, it's, you know, it's a daily battle to figure out things like distance learning, et cetera. But for four kids, it's quite a different experience. And I thought Kate would be a pretty interesting interview, given all the circumstances. And you'll laugh, you'll cry, and you'll feel some hope after talking to her, because what she and her husband are doing during this time is it's pretty remarkable. In many ways, they're a model to follow. Enjoy today's episode of Distanced. Kate, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We're what, probably past a month here at this point? How long have you been quarantined?
We are heading into our fifth week. And I would say that my four children have not seen public in 4.5 weeks. And we go out for like the basic necessities, but maybe less than once a week, probably every 8 days. So honestly, it's like Groundhog's Day. So you tell me. I think it's five-ish.
So two things about that narrative are probably different than the experience that a lot of people have. First of all, length of quarantine, 6 weeks actually feels a little bit longer than what most people have had. Or am I just losing track of time?
I don't know, because as we were talking about it yesterday on Easter with my parents, it was early March when my sister got her schools closed down in Vail, which was actually one of, like, per capita, it was one of the initial hotspots, because they just had a very, very high influx of cases earlier on. And they had it here in early March. And so now we're, what, mid-April? I mean, again, every day kind of blurs to the next. But I think that, yeah, we're darn close. And our school is called off that first week of March, I want to say.
And so the other part of the narrative that's pretty interesting is four kids. So, you know, that seems difficult, like at this very moment, since I assume all of them are out of school.
All of them are out of school. One goes to middle school at a different school from the other children, so they have different breaks. So we're right now fighting the why does he get spring break this week when the three of them had spring break last week? They all feel like it should be kind of blended together, which it's not for the first time ever. And then the added challenge is we have a kindergartner and second grader. And so that's not a very self-directed learning kind of age group. So the remote learning is wonderful for the older children, but for the younger set, it's very difficult for two full-time working parents to manage homeschooling and the expectation of self-directed learning, which is just really not something that they've ever had. They've never built a muscle for that. So it's
so you mean they can't territory. Just kind of smoke cigars on the couch and read Chaucer or whatever? Totally.
Not yet. I mean, we're getting there, right? So we're 5 weeks in, we're getting closer to that, but not yet.
There's so many questions I want to ask down that path, but before we even go there, so, you know, I introduced you as somebody from San Diego. And so I'm really curious, like, so what neighborhood do you live in San Diego? What's the situation like? And, you know, describe the situation on the ground as best you can in San Diego.
Sure. So we're North County, coastal. So our, you know, geographic area is known as Carmel Valley, but it's, you know, in San Diego. We're right next door to Del Mar, right on the beach. And we have probably today, I want to say we have around 25 cases of COVID. We had some early cases as all the schools were shutting down, with parents that maybe traveled abroad, and then children that went to the schools. But I would say we're about 20 minutes from downtown San Diego, and not necessarily removed, right? We have one of the higher case counts, and all of the expectations, just given the testing resources, are that you should expect 10x whatever the published amount is. So we really felt early on that we needed to heed all the warnings because there were so many unknowns. You didn't have to wear a mask. You didn't have to wear gloves. There was kind of iffy social distancing happening at the grocery stores. So we just kind of shut it down. And I feel like our community just took it incredibly seriously. I think all of San Diego did, but because we had some of the higher case count earlier on, the expectation was assume a lot of people have it and just heed the warning.
When did you kind of first know that this was a problem? So I know you travel a lot for work. And like, was there a moment where somebody at your office or somebody said something where, oh my gosh, this is going to be a global pandemic? Did you have a moment?
You know, interestingly, it was probably in January. So I have a cousin that works for USA Hockey, and she was in China with a team and got really sick. And it was right when they were in Beijing, and everything was happening in Wuhan. And she was like, I'm getting nervous that they're not going to allow travel in and out. So she ended up coming back. And that was kind of where we started really tuning in to, you know, this is going to be bigger than just an isolated geographic incident. I would say San Diego has been on the radar for a long time because a lot of the cruise ships would fly individuals here to be at the Navy bases. And we're probably only 15 miles from Miramar. So we knew that they were quarantining cases from many of the cruise ships for domestic patients locally. But again, that didn't precipitate, or any of the issues that we had with the COVID spread weren't as a result of those quarantines. They really did do a nice job of keeping the individuals there. But we did have kind of a daily, you know, dialogue with news stations and such that were giving us counts of individuals in San Diego that tested COVID positive based on the cruise ship quarantines at the naval bases.
Interesting. And so, you know, that proximity to the naval facilities probably created a bit of a heightened awareness in advance. Now, what about your community? When did you have your first conversation with a neighbor or somebody where, oh my gosh, like, hey, this is going to be a thing? Was there a moment like that?
It was. I mean, truly, it was the day they had called, you know, a meeting, the school district called a meeting, and we were all just kind of waiting around because at that point, LA County had already declared that they were not going to have kids come back to school in early March. And the school district met, they sent us a message on Thursday night saying, at this point, we do not see any reason to cancel school, you know, so we're just going to watch and, you know, listen to the medical director in San Diego County for direction. That was a Thursday night. Sent the kids to school on Friday, and midway through Friday, we got the notice that they were not going back to school the next week. And at that moment, then things started coming out, right? So we started getting messages from the various schools that maybe a parent had been impacted, or, you know, just different community spread. And then, of course, social networking via Nextdoor was immediately.
So interesting. So Nextdoor was definitely a thing here. And I remember there was a long thread by a doctor that was started here locally that, you know, ended up getting 100 messages and everybody started asking questions. And so it seems like that's a place where your community also gathers.
Absolutely. And it's so funny. It's like the dichotomy of Nextdoor is it's either like a social shaming place because they'll snap a picture of somebody that wasn't 6 foot from someone, you know, the peer. And then it's also a place where people can go for a little comic relief, and like they want to have the sense of community and like we're going to get through this together. And so there's trying to be some lighter moments, but then there's also a lot of that, you know, you're not obeying the rules, or somebody took off their latex gloves and left them on the parking lot of Trader Joe's. So you never know what you're going to get when you open it up, but it hopefully will end up being more of a community builder than defeating that.
Does anyone you know in your community, or, you know, I guess, you know, first degree now, like kind of in recent days, have they gotten the virus? You know, obviously you're not going to really reveal names, but just is it like a lot of first degree people, second degree people? How many degrees out would you have to go to know someone?
Yeah, so we're New Yorkers. So my husband and I are both from New York. So we have a lot of first degree from New York, in New York that have it. There are several parents in our community that have it that we know personally, just from the kids and so forth. All of them traveled, not necessarily out of the country. All of them traveled right in the weeks leading up to kind of the shutdown, whether it be to a ski destination, right? We have a lot of February breaks, which they term ski week out here, And that was unfortunately an issue for a lot of the families that we're close with. And so fortunately, we've had very successful contacts that have overcome the COVID diagnosis, but we do have several first degree and then a lot of second and tertiary.
And within within San Diego, I mean, so there's this perception, maybe, you know, obviously Northern California and Southern California, very different geographically. When they portray Southern California's response in the news, you know, you see pictures of people on beaches and the weather is gorgeous and everything like that. And so is it really like that, or what's the actual situation on the ground?
I would say, you know, this from Northern California, we've had a very rainy winter. And so in the early days where it was kind of, you know, it's out there, we're calling off schools, but we weren't at a shelter in place or a stay at home order. Then we had some sunshine and people were out on the beach. The water is much too cold. You know, the Pacific, it's not, you know, habitable or hospitable in this time of year. So surfers go out there with wetsuits, but people are not out there. I feel like we've gotten cuts of Miami mixed up with San Diego, and that's not accurate. There's nobody that's going into the water right now. But yes, people are walking on the beach. People are hiking on the trails. There was a lot of just getting out of the house because we weren't in a stay-at-home or shelter-in-place order as of yet. At this point, all of the public parking is not available. And really, if you go onto the beaches, you know, because they're all closed, then you could face the $1,000 fine. So now it's completely empty. I mean, no one's out. The problem with that, as my husband would argue, is that you close out all of those very wide trail runs, and then you've got everybody just congregating onto the sidewalk. And no one really knows how to interact anymore. So everyone's trying to figure out, like, do I walk out into the bike lane and potentially, you know, get close to a car? Or do I just, you know, hold my breath and walk by the next person? And now that we're all wearing masks, it's, you know, a lot of people feel a little bit more comfortable getting even closer. So now our sidewalks are more dense. And so it's a little bit of a double-edged sword.
Interesting. It's strange to me. One thing that I've observed, and I don't literally know anything about this, but I'll save it for future guests who I talk to. But you look at cities like Chicago and Detroit, where you assume that it is freezing and people must be confined, and it must be easier to quarantine and kind of stay back. But yet we're seeing, you know, significant disease spread in some of those places. But in San Diego, where it's, you know, sort of sunny and bright outside, you know, you would think that there's more possibility for interaction. Yet it seems like San Diego has done a fairly decent job of containing things so far. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I am amazed at how quickly, from, you know, the first responders getting people into the hospitals, making sure that they have the appropriate care at the appropriate site of care, and then also just the groceries, the takeout facilities, everyone's masked, everyone's wearing gloves. All of the grocery stores are now allowing a certain number of people in. We have senior hours at virtually every, you know, retail outlet. So I think that they have done a really amazing job. And I think there's just a heightened tolerance for that. Everyone's passed the go and hoard toilet paper phase in their, you know, pandemic crisis. And now everybody's thinking a little bit more consciously about, let's make sure the right people get, you know, the food and all of the, you know, products that they need. So some of the hysteria has worn off, but I also think there's much more of a sense of community that we're all in this together. So let's not rob Peter to pay Paul.
That's really good to hear. It seems like, you know, good positive reaction. What's your go-to news source? And so here in the Bay, I mean, obviously, you know, there's certain people that everyone has taken to following on Twitter. And so there's a doctor from UCSF who nightly sends his chronicles about, you know, what he's seeing in the hospital on the ground. And it's giving people some cause for hope because he reported early that he was seeing a flattening of cases. Is there a person or a resource that people follow in San Diego right now?
Yeah, I think that, so personally, we are very tied into New York still. And so we daily watch Governor Cuomo's and then watch Chris Cuomo live at night just to hear kind of the national perspective. And then really just to check in with New York because it is just heavy on our hearts. In San Diego, same thing. We have a couple of ER docs that write on Nextdoor and post just updates and give some, you know, tips and that kind of thing, or might even say thanks to some of the community efforts. There's a nonprofit called Fueling the Frontline, which is basically supporting some of the local restaurants. And you, it's a GoFundMe page where all of the dollars go to the local restaurants, but then feed the front lines at the healthcare institutions. So they have been very vocal on those mediums, as well as I think a lot of just great knowledge is coming from the Johns Hopkins website as well. So I would say maybe a mix of national and community based is kind of what we're tuning into, and the Cuomos.
Very good. Yeah, they the Cuomos are for sure entertaining. There's no doubt about
Absolutely.
That. You know, you've described a largely positive community-oriented response. I'm not hearing really of any drama, but if you had to call out any drama in San Diego at all, or something that you encountered even in the early days, is there even anything remotely like that? Like, what is the talk? What are people judging each other for right now?
I think the only kind of watch out or, you know, exposed risk that we have right now is the fact that if we're not going to go back to school this year, and we've got a very heavy population of children that depend on resources from breakfast and lunch just to a safe place to land every day, I think that's what's heavy on everybody right now. I think that from a standpoint of capacity inside the hospitals, the ICUs, the ventilators, and the PPE, I think that, you know, right now, because we haven't seen a huge surge and we feel like maybe the peak is amongst us, that we're doing a good job in that capacity. But I think right now that it's just more of making sure that the individuals that don't have, you know, a safe place to land, and the kids that are out of school and don't have access to technology for the remote learning, that's really what keeps all of us up at night.
What's really, really interesting is I have more of these conversations. I recorded one a couple days ago from somebody from Grand Rapids, Michigan. And you know, they're still sort of early-ish in their response, and it's not the community-oriented response as you described. Well, I take that back. The community has come together, it seems over there, but it's not like a positive state. And my hypothesis on this is, it's like when you do well, it kind of feeds back into the community. It's almost like this psychology of, oh my gosh, you're doing a good job, keep doing it. And I feel like we've achieved that in California. I mean, maybe we're all like children at the end of the day, huh?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's so basic, right? You have kids that have access to 3D printers, and they were able to print up face masks and then send off the, you know, the template to other organizations, and then other kids can kind of feed into that. I think the amount of kind of giving back and just community coming together has been really awe-inspiring. And a lot of what we're looking to do right now, because we have a lot of kids and have to be very conscious of kind of where we go and what we might, you know, encounter. It's just the opportunity to lend a hand wherever we can. And I haven't seen a lot of divisiveness, honestly. I just think that there's still a lot that we don't know, because we're so worried about just the medical community and the front lines, which is appropriate, but we haven't seen some of the tertiary effects of what happens to, you know, the kids that had to be home without the proper nourishment, without the proper supervision, and certainly, you know, no access to a distance learning program. That's, I think, where the fallout weighs heaviest on me.
So then let's kind of focus the situation at home here. Four kids. I mean, how is that even somewhat Crazy. Pleasant in quarantine? Like, that kind of just paint the picture of what it's like, and when you wake up, and, you know, is there just stuff flying around? What's going on there?
So we kind of like level set every day that everybody's healthy. So we have all of our prayers answered just by virtue of they're healthy. We have everything that we need just in their health. And then we get real on, you know, assignments for everybody. And I will say, for the older two, middle school, preteen, fair amount of attitude, and a 10-year-old who's in fourth grade, they're doing really well. They're very self-directed. They actually like the autonomy of kind of having to log into the Zoom class and having to change, you know, periods online and everything like that. That's actually kind of infused them with a different kind of learning experience, and they like it. They also like that it's only between 90 minutes to 4 hours a day. So it's definitely kind of truncated their daily school routine. Like I said, the younger two, it's just very difficult. Right now, we don't have a Zoom learning platform, so everything is very self-directed. They get their assignments at the beginning of the day. They work through those. We're trying to kind of flex in and help them out as much as we can. But again, our day jobs didn't stop. So I think that's the, you know, tough tension that we always deal with every day is how do you give the appropriate amount of attention to the kids that deserve it and then still continue, you know, your career and giving to your company that you have to balance.
How long can you take this? Like how many more, if somebody just said, you know, you have to take this for the maximum amount of time you can take it, you know, until breaking point. What is breaking point for you? Like give us a time frame.
We're resigned to the end of the year. I think it's just a matter of time. And so I know that, you know, Governor Newsom has kind of flirted with the idea of schools not going back. I know that our, you know, a lot of the school districts have said no masks for the rest of the year. We're right there. And frankly, Joe and I are kind of like, yeah, we're not going back to school this year. And it's the right thing to do. Because I think that right now it would be too detrimental to the overall country's health and our community's health to have children back at school and potentially carrying things unknowingly and then taking it back to caregivers and grandparents and everyone else. So I do believe it's the right thing to do. So I have my countdown. We've got 9 weeks until summer break for the younger kids. The older one is out a little bit earlier. And then I have my sights kind of set on like what happens this summer. Because the summer is also very difficult for two working parents to kind of cobble together activities every day. And we have helpers, but it's just, I don't know that we're going to have availability of anything outside of our home this summer even. So that's what we're kind of struggling with today. So I've got my 9 weeks, but then I add on another 6 weeks to that. And it feels like we're going to have to come up with something better.
And I mean, so I'm right there with you. I'm sure school is canceled for the year, but just to clarify, you know, you meant the school year, not the end of 2020.
Absolutely not. Like that hasn't even crossed my mind. I know that's also a possibility, but I'm talking only the school year right now.
That would be just utterly devastating. I don't know if I could, I don't know what I would do if it were till the end of the year.
Agreed. Cause I just think it's a, you know, detriment of the kids, assuming everything from a public health perspective gets to a more appropriate space, and we've got testing and we've got antibody testing and we've got, you know, a vaccine on the horizon. I can't see how we wouldn't go back in the fall. That said, if we don't have all of those things, then we have to also resign ourselves to we're still in a public health crisis and we're not going to be able to take that chance.
And I realize this is not your, I know you happen to have a job in healthcare and we're not going to really touch on that much, but you know, you do have some perspective. This is not your professional opinion. This is just your personal opinion. I'm just curious, do you think we'll get all that stuff that you just described?
It's so hard. I honestly don't know. So I love living in San Diego because we do have a fair amount of biotech and development and R&D. And so what I hear from the community down here is that, yes, there is availability of testing and yes, we can do it. But it's just scaling that. And so right now it's very, you know, organic in its growth trajectory, and to scale it to the degree that other countries that are going back to work have, it seems like a heavy lift right now. But optimistically, yes, I want to believe that we can get there and that maybe, you know, other, you know, communities and areas throughout the country are developing at the same trajectory that we are here. But it's hard to see that path right now to where testing is freely available and, you know, a vaccine is forthcoming. And then what does that look like from a, you know, who gets the vaccine?
So back to the kids for a second, and, you know, we're saying we're hunkered down here and we're concluding that end of school year for sure. But do you think that there is any impact on them psychologically or in any other way, like by not being in school? Do you worry about that, or do you think it's actually mostly a positive?
No, I absolutely worry about that. I think that, you know, because we have a big family, it's not that we do a lot of play dates. It's not like the kids ever do sleepovers or anything that they're missing out on. What they are missing out on is just that community of their classroom and their peers that are at the exact same level that they are. So when you have a household with a broad range of ages and you're trying to focus on a kindergartner that's just learning sight words and then trying to solve for, you know, PowerPoints and other things that the oldest is doing, it's really difficult to give them the amount of attention and direction that they need. And so that's, I do feel for them. And I didn't grow up, you know, dreaming to be an educator. And so I think that there are also our heroes. I have so much respect for them, always have and always will. I grew up with two parents in education, and I just think it's a real challenge because that's not my muscle. And so I'm really trying hard. And so I'm afraid that I'm messing them up a little bit. And the summer slide is going to become more of a, like a spring summer slide. But I'm hoping that, you know, we can kind of hit our rhythm here in the next couple of weeks and then and carry it through the summer. Because now I feel like we can't take our foot off the gas. Like now I feel like we can't even give them a proper summer break. We're just going to continually be reinforcing what they should have learned in the classroom this year.
How's your husband doing?
He's good. He's funny. Like he loves taking them on runs for PE. And when it was raining for the last 5 days, they did mud runs and that kind of thing. And he's definitely the eternal optimist and trying to make the best of it. However, he has a very demanding job. And so he also realizes that it's tough to manage all of this plus work from home where he's usually traveling for the, you know, bulk of the week. So I think we're all just kind of trying to figure out where we can best influence the most positive outcome.
You're
changes by the hour.
You're not getting on airplanes, I assume, right now.
Never. Not in the foreseeable future. I realize they're probably the most safe place to be, right? They're very clean. There's limited individuals traveling, but we have both felt like what we could potentially bring into our home and our community from any travel would be completely needless at this point. And so both of us are heeding the stay-at-home warnings and supported by the companies that we work for.
Are you, I mean, so for kids though, it's not like they're going to be listening to, you know, advice from Dr. Fauci about, you know, washing their hands for 25 seconds or whatever. And I mean, that's like it's a high degree of risk. Like, do you worry about them at all? And like, hey, you know, they're going to do something or somehow when they play outside or if you know, they're not going to abide by these social distancing rules. Like, what's your degree of worry with them?
When they're not here. So right now there's such a heightened awareness that it's hilarious. Like they'll come into the house and if somebody tries to bring in, you know, groceries and they, like I said, they've not been out, but they'll meet us at the car with groceries and we just ask them not to touch anything and they'll come out and, you know, want to wipe everything down and just be a part of the new process. And so I think that we're kind of feeding the beast right now and they're very into it. To your point, I think once they go back into the world, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how much carries over. Because right now there's a heightened awareness and we have our eye on everything that they're doing. When they go back to school, I can't say that they're going to wash their hands before snack. And that does worry me. It worries me not necessarily for them because they're very healthy children with no pre-existing conditions, but those around us. So not only caregivers, but my parents just moved here, 76 and 68. And we have to just be mindful of the community and not just, you know, what would the impact be on an individual.
What's your risk appetite in San Diego? So are you going out, taking stuff out? Are you like, what's the most risk taking thing that you've done in the past 5 to 6 weeks?
We're doing takeout mainly to support local businesses and because we are not culinary experts. And so I really feel like just to keep everybody's spirits alive, we really feel like that's the right thing to do. I feel like every one of the restaurants we've gone to has absolutely, you know, we've been curbside with gloves and masks. And I hope that's the case inside the establishments, which I'm sure it is. So I would say that's probably our riskiest thing. Outside of that, we're completely, you know, we take off our gloves, we Purell, we come in, we wash for 25 seconds. We then wipe down everything that we've touched. I mean, it's a fever pitch here, but we're doing what we can to prevent the...
It sounds like you run like a pretty good, tight, process-oriented household, which is like miraculous to me. Like, so, you know, I
very Lean Six Sigma.
It's, I mean, we take out stuff from Instacart or whatever, and...
We can't get times on Instacart, so bless you for getting those, but we can't get any appointments with Instacart, so we have to go to the store.
It's like a 3-day window, and so I ordered on Friday. Yeah. I'm going to get it Tuesday, but I do not do the thing where I wipe down the groceries when we get them. I mean, I wash my hands all the time and stuff, but at some point, I just get a little bit lazy. I wash my hands all the time. I've got the dry hands, but...
Oh, I know.
But it sounds like you got this down.
One of my students lodged a complaint today because I put all of the veggies and fruit in a vinegar bath because I don't have veggie wash, which is apparently a thing. I don't have that. So I looked it up online, and the FDA says if you do a kind of a mix of veggie and or vinegar and water, it will cleanse the vegetables. But it wrinkled all the skin on the apples. And so one of my students was complaining about that today.
That's pretty awesome. So if you take away something, a good tip from this, don't do the vinegar.
Right. Or make it a science experiment.
For kids, I mean, this sounds, so have you had a moment or your husband where you've just almost snapped in the last 6 weeks?
Definitely. Well, like we'll Rochambeau who gets to go pick up the takeout on the days that we take out, just purely to take a drive. And if we get something super local, then it feels a little bit ridiculous. Like you kind of want to go out and do a couple laps before you end up at that restaurant that might be like 2 miles away from you. So yes, absolutely. I think that we have a good, you know, working relationship now that we have six under one household, where it's kind of like the other one knows when the one is at that point where they need just like a break. The happy accident that has come out of this is definitely the amount of people out walking around, not to say that the crowd, sidewalks aren't crowded, but I love seeing people out walking every night after dinner and just having, you know, social distance conversations. But that's something that I remember so fondly in New York. We went for a walk every night after dinner on the 4 months out of the year that it was, you know, weather was favorable. So I love seeing that kind of come out of this.
With, I mean, it is really interesting. I mean, with six people under the household, as you put it, I mean, do you get any alone time? Like any, aside from the takeout? None.
None. No. No. And I think that that's an interesting thing, right? Because I think the kids, although they're not saying, hey, I have anxiety about this, I'm nervous because you're always watching the news and I'm hearing these numbers. And we try to shelter them, but obviously they, you know, hear things. I think that they want that. They want to feel close and they want for us to say like everything's okay. And just the way of, hey, we're all together in this big, you know, nuclear household right now. And so we're definitely not saying, okay, you can't come in and sleep in the bed tonight. Like you need to stay in your own bed. You've got school tomorrow. It's like, really, it's our homeschool and the rules are pretty, you know, lax anyways. So let's just embrace the time that maybe your anxiety is saying, I want more time with you and closeness.
I need an hour walk a day and mm-hmm. my wife does too. If we don't get some of that just space to breathe, like it's just, I don't know what I would do with right now. It's like, it's just so much of this drama gets internalized and it just builds up. And like, if I don't go for a walk, I'm just not myself.
And I've always worked from home. So I think that's the funny thing. You know, this is the first year we've had all the kids in school. So I've always had, you know, someone at the house with a caregiver while I'm upstairs working, and I've been able to take breaks and have lunch and see everyone. So it did feel very lonely and, you know, in the August, September timeframe. And then I kind of got into my new norm and then this happened. And so everybody's back underfoot. And so it's kind of, you know, a be careful what you wish for moment. But at the same time, I'm trying to realize that like, this is exactly what we make it. And so I'm trying to temper whatever, you know, alone time I need, and believe me, we all need it, and just try and bring them all in.
You have to leave us with one funny anecdote before you go about, you know, life with four kids under the roof. Like, has anything funny or something happened that, you know, might cause other people to laugh, it might cause you to cry?
So essentially it's every one of the memes that you see. I mean, those really keep me alive every day because I'm thinking, oh, somebody else feels this way. Or like, yes, this is a thing like where you do, you know, kind of depend on the rosé at the end of the day. But I will say now, you know, we've always had a big backyard here and the kids have gone out to play and it was just kind of like, get your shoes on, go out and play. And now every time they want to walk outside, they're like, can I go out for recess? And I'm like, guys, it's just going out to play. Like, even though it's homeschool, you don't have to call it recess. You can just open the door, go outside and play. And so it's just little things like that that make us realize this is how they're kind of normalizing this experience, is to say, well, at 12 o'clock during my normal day, I'm going out for lunch recess. So now that I'm in my home, I'm still going to call it those kind of things. And that keeps it light. And I don't know, I think we just have to all just, you know, kind of embrace the new norm for right now and just hope that our country is on a path to healing and the world really is on a path to healing. And then we can get back to our new norm, but I don't think it'll ever be like our old norm. And that may be one of the silver linings in all of this, is that we probably overscheduled and overcommitted to virtually everything in our kids' lives and in our professional lives. And I hope that we don't necessarily go back to that velocity.
I think that's a good message for everybody. And definitely I feel like there's no way that we're going back to overscheduling things. It's going to be an ease back into things. But the thing I worry about is we're also not going to go back to spending as much as we did on things, because now we're getting settled into this routine of mostly eating at home, mostly doing stuff at home. Right. And so I think that's going to have devastating ramifications for the economy. I certainly hope not, but I do worry about that.
I agree. We think about that a lot. And Joe and two of the boys have taken up guitar. So if it's like the next Partridge Family that comes out of this, just beware, because everyone in my house is tone deaf, but it could be interesting, and we could have a really funny reality show coming on the other side of this.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first. So you launched it on this podcast episode. So
the Rossetti Family. I don't know. Where are we going to get the bus? We got to come up with a good bus.
Yeah, you got it. I'm sure you can snag a mystery machine from eBay somewhere.
Westfalia somewhere.
Well, Kate, this was great. Really appreciate you spending the time. So if you're listening to this and, you know, you want a model of a good city and a good family, look no further than the Rossettis.
That is way too kind. I wish for everybody to have, you know, health in their cities and communities, and stay close, take care of one another, and we will all get through this.
Good, positive message. Thank you, Kate.
Take care.
Thanks for joining again to listen to an episode of Distanced. What a remarkable person who, you know, has just remained extremely positive throughout this whole situation. I mean, it seems like Kate and her husband are doing about as well as you can be and have the right mentality to push through. And I certainly walked away thinking, you know, there are things that I could change and, you know, not be so negative all the time or feel devoid of energy. I mean, it's just impossible to imagine having four young children right now, all at different grades, trying to manage through that. And San Diego, good job, San Diego. You seem to be, you know, holding it together and coming together as a community throughout this. So shout out to San Diego. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate Distanced on whatever podcast platform you're listening on, and follow me on Twitter at Subes01. That's SUBES01. Thanks for joining.